Welcome to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Bringing you enlightened discussions with authors, creatives, innovative business and health professionals, and ordinary people living extraordinary lives. Sharing their expertise and life stories. Making a difference, one word at a time. Now here's your host, Vicki St. Clair.
And welcome, welcome. My first guest today says this in the introduction of her book, The Artist as Entrepreneur. It is artists who remind us to pay attention, to look again, to witness what is in our hearts. It is artists who meditate, reflect, observe, obsess and criticize. It is artists who mourn and adorn, who help us see and sometimes accept the beauty, the ugliness and mystery of life. These reflections form the foundation of my obsession, guiding visual artists, and we're going to hear from her in just one moment. Later in the show, Joyce Chapman returns to discuss how to be your own coach. She's a multi-published author, speaker, dream activist, and is committed to helping others live the lives they envision today. More than ever today, it's critical that we learn to focus our efforts and stop spinning our wheels. And so Joyce is going to tell us, don't give up on your dreams. Even in this economy, you can still dream big, and she's going to tell us how to be our own coach. And that's coming up later. But first, I want to introduce Miriam Works. I'm very pleased to have Miriam Works in the studio with me. She is an artist, author, and businesswoman. She's been engaged in the arts for almost 30 years, and for the past 15 years has been teaching and consulting on the art of running a business and the business of art. She was the business manager, exhibition coordinator, and buyer for the folk art gallery La Tienda, and the assistant director for Fireworks Fine Crafts Galleries, one of my favorite stores. And Miriam Works is the author of The Artist as Entrepreneur, a business and marketing guide for the artists, for artists and craftspeople. Miriam, welcome.
Thank you, Vicki. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, I'm very pleased to have you here. I met you, I told you before the show, many years ago, actually. You were doing a workshop. And even though I'm not an artist, I went along to see what kind of workshops you were doing and learned such a lot. And you were the first person I thought of when I wanted to put this show together. So I wanted to go just back to that introduction that I read at the beginning of the show and ask you about your obsession with guiding visual artists. Where did it begin? How did it begin?
Oh, my goodness. Well, it is founded, I think, in my professional career as a buyer and a marketing director and manager for local galleries. The Folk Art Gallery La Tienda was incredibly influential in my career in that it helped me understand how important craft and art are throughout the world. And then after that, working at fireworks galleries just helped me see the importance of American craftspeople and kind of their contribution to our society, the absolute importance of what they do every day and how it enlivens our lives.
And the Pacific Northwest is such a fantastic place for that, isn't it?
We have so many artists here, and we're lucky. We're very lucky in that way.
Mm. Well, I actually reached out to several artists that I know, both here and in Canada, and I have some of their questions to run
Great.
By you later on in the show today. But I wanted to start, first of all, with, the common myth that everybody says, all artists are starving. Mm-hmm. I know when I gave up my corporate job to become a writer, everybody said, you're going to be a starving writer. And I'm like, no, I didn't plan that. And I'm sure artists don't either. So let's talk a little bit about that. You say it can stymie a sustaining artist.
Absolutely. Well, I always like to quote Pablo Picasso, who said, I want to live like a poor man, but with a lot of money. And I think that's a very good guiding principle for us to remember as artists. We do tend to limit ourselves, and the way we think is kind of what we manifest in life. If we have a lot of limitations about money, if we believe it's not possible, we limit ourselves in so many ways. One of the very common things that artists do is they think of their own friends and their own family as their customers, and sometimes don't think in a broader way, in a wider way, about the possibilities for customers and clients who may have more money than their own friends and family do.
Mm. Actually, in your book, you do encourage artists to look outside their own hometowns, even because you say that many people in their hometowns are often overlooked or kind of taken for granted.
Yes, we are so overlooked in our own backyard. It's so much more exotic to be an artist from Seattle if you're presenting your work, say, in New York or Miami. And the converse, of course, is true, too. You need to get out of your own comfort zone. You need to get out of your own arena, really, in order to kind of spread your wings and really fly.
Now, no one size marketing or selling approach fits all, but you say there are definite characteristics amongst successful artists, mm-hmm. definite characteristics, definite approaches, and I wanted to take a look at some of those. The first two are what we might imagine, hard work and time management.
Mm-hmm. So important, absolutely. All of the artists I know and have read of that are successful are incredibly hard workers. They're really obsessed with what they do. I have a friend, an artist, who says you have to want to make your work more than you want to go out on a date. And perhaps that's extreme for some artists, but I think it's very, very important guideline.
Yeah, living it and breathing it, for sure. Relationship building is a big one. Talk a little bit about relationship building and how that applies to visual artists.
Well, I think sometimes artists can overlook who their customer is. They have a bit of a stereotype, in a way, about, well, who's my customer? Who is a possibility as a customer or a new client? I tell a great story in my workshops about an artist who had a bunch of postcards printed and was running from her studio to her car to go deliver them to the post office, and stopped and gave a couple to a gentleman who was doing her gardening work, and said, gosh, you know, I don't think you'll be interested particularly, but I'm having a show next week, and here are a couple of my postcards. And of course, the gentleman, the gardener, came to her show and bought two pieces of artwork, two of her paintings. And that was a great lesson for her. And I spread it with all of my students and clients, because we think sometimes in a particular kind of alleyway, in a way, about our customers. Don't overlook making those relationships in your community.
Right. So don't assume that somebody is not going to be interested.
Absolutely.
Because they may well have a friend, relative, as you said.
Mm-hmm.
Research is another big strength and characteristic of successful artists. What kind of research?
Well, certainly as a gallery exhibitions manager, nothing was harder for me to accept than an artist who would present a series of slides, or these days a CD of images, of artwork that was not suited for my gallery. And I can say that's a very universal feeling among gallery directors, exhibition managers, and that sort of thing. An artist needs to have done their research as to what venues, what does their prospective venue show normally? What is their history of exhibitions, what is their focus as an organization before, you know, submitting images or slides to them.
Just like any marketing or sales, you don't want to be throwing mud on, you know, there is a philosophy out there, hey, I threw enough mud on the wall, some's going to stick. But
yeah,
but that's an awful lot of work to do, isn't it?
We can spin our wheels presenting our work to completely inappropriate venues. And being an artist is hard enough work.
Sure.
Without going that down that path.
Now, we keep using the word artist, but you specialize in visual artists.
I do.
Talk a little bit about what that encompasses. It's not just painters. It's
absolutely. The artists that I work with encompass the, you know, traditional fine arts. So painters, sculptors, photographers, wall art of all kinds, conceptual art, installation artists. I've actually worked with a fire artist. I also work with craftspeople. So what would traditionally be called crafts, so jewelers, woodworkers, people working in all kinds of craft media.
Mm. Now, number five on your list of seven characteristics and approaches of successful artists, number five is self-confidence, real or pretend.
Yes, yes, indeed. I think it was Kurt Vonnegut that said, we are what we pretend to be. And sometimes we need to practice pretending to be confident in our work. And I always recommend in my workshops and in my consulting that artists actually role play with a friend or with someone that they know to be supportive of them and their work, that they actually, you know, stand up, walk across a room and say, "Hello, my name is Miriam Works and I'm an artist." And be able to perhaps say one sentence about what their art is that they do. That's just a great tip. And, you know, folks usually shift and get a little bit uncomfortable in the workshops when I bring that up. But by the end of the day, most folks are pretty comfortable with it.
Okay. So we call that give elevator speech. They're yes. Elevator speech, yeah.
Yes, indeed.
We actually did a show on that not too long ago. I'll look that up when we did that show. I have
Very
it written
helpful.
Down somewhere, but I'll give you those dates out. You also say they have to have a thick skin. Difficult because many artists, and I'll include writers in that, are very, I won't say insecure, but that they're maybe insecure about their work because it's a very subjective.
Absolutely. And it comes from the heart. What we do as artists really comes from within. It's not like a quote-unquote normal job. It's not something that we can divorce ourselves from. And that's where the sense of rejection can come from when we don't get accepted into a gallery or into a show or even on a small scale, you know, at the local coffee shop, if we're having a show, if there are no sales, it can really hurt. When I really recommend to people that they develop a thick skin, it's almost really a survival mechanism. The more folks get out there, the more artists get out there and show their work, the thicker the skin they will develop. It takes exposure.
Okay. And you say talent, the last one on there is talent, but characteristics and skills are likely more important to their success than actual talent.
Absolutely. And I think we all know the story of the artist who, you know, the one who has the great talent who remains undiscovered and the artist who maybe gets by a little bit more on their hard work. And sometimes that's a source of bitterness or resentment in the art world. And that's a shame because we need to look at what artists are doing that are successful and pattern ourselves. Even if we're not patterning our work, we need to pattern our efforts after what that artist has been doing.
Balancing that left brain, right brain
Absolutely.
Philosophy. And we'll get into that in a little bit. We need to take a quick break. We'll be right back. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. My special guest in this segment is Miriam Works. We'll be right back.
So, I'm in the Pompidou, that's in Paris. And the French, they're far more laid back about their art galleries. There's little children running around. I see a piece by Matisse. That's my window of opportunity. I take 5 steps back, I put my head down, and I run at it!
Parkinson's disease affects as many as 1 million people in the United States. At the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, it's our mission to beat this disease. To learn about the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, or if you want to help support our work, visit our website, pdf.org, or call us at 800-457-6676. In the Northwest, contact the Northwest Parkinson's Foundation at nwpf.org.
Next week on Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair, we'll explore giving peace a deadline. Guests Nathan Otto and Amber Lupton traveled the world examining what peace means, and they are convinced that if we all participate, we can have world peace in 5 years. We'll also talk with Dr. Lydia Denworth, a leading expert on America's lead-free policies and author of Toxic Truth, a scientist, a doctor, and the battle over lead. Please join us Monday at noon on Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair.
20 years ago, Bellevue was a quiet bedroom community. Today, Bellevue is an exciting place to live, work, and play. Find out more about this city in a park by listening to Bellevue Today, heard each Thursday from 1 to 2 p.m. on Alternative Talk 1150 and streaming live at 1150kknw.com.
That's Bellevue Today on Alternative Talk 1150. Bellevue Today is hosted by Kevin Henry and Kevin Morris.
News, traffic, and weather? Now you can get your information fixed weekdays on Alternative Talk 1150 a.m.
Makes me want to rock out!
And welcome back. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. My guest this half hour is Miriam Works. She's written a book called The Artist as Entrepreneur, but she's much more than that. She's a very seasoned arts professional, very well known in the Seattle area as a consultant and artist. And I wanted to talk a little bit in this section, Miriam, about marketing tools and materials. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, we just talked about the left brain, right brain hemispheres and how many people get so absorbed in the creative process, it's very hard then to switch off and become a business person and a marketing person. I'll actually read you, I'm going to do a synopsis of this email here, but this is from Nola Tressler, who's an artist in the Tacoma area, and she's quite well known down there. And she actually had a background in marketing, started several businesses herself, so she has the ability to do marketing and business. She retired to do full-time artwork, now finds it very difficult to find that balance. She said, even with the experiences in my background, I still have a hard time leaving my passion of creating a piece of art to go to my left brain to do book work, marketing, etc. It's just not as much fun. Mm-hmm. What recommendations do you give to people on that?
Gosh, that's a tough one, only because there will never be anything more fun than making your artwork. It's just impossible to arrive at something that's more exciting for the vast majority of good artists.
And I know our listeners can't see you. You can't see Miriam, but she's jumping up and down on her chair when she said there'll never be anything more fun.
I know, because of the artwork that I do, how engaged one becomes and how excited you are about the work that you do. The best tip that I've found in working with consulting clients is that you establish a schedule, which I know is a very, very left brain thing to say, but the more scheduled you can get yourself to be. And many professional artists say that they spend approximately half of their time doing the business and marketing side of things, and they spend about half of their time actually making their artwork. Depending on whether an artist is doing their work part-time or full-time will kind of determine what their ultimate schedule is. But that's the best tip I really can give folks. Set up a schedule, try your best to stick with it, and give yourself the reward of going back into the studio and making more work.
Mm. I personally, because I work creatively and business side, and I find it very hard to switch to, and mm-hmm. I do just what you say. You know, I set a day for my core competency, which would be my writing, etc., and then a day for business. I can't seem to juggle them very, right. very effectively.
Yeah. I think switching back and forth within a day is just more than most artists can do.
Right. Let's look at some of the tips for evaluating online marketing sites, because, you know, so many people, there are thousands of sites out there. I mean, mm-hmm. I did a little research and I was just staggered how
There's
many sites
so
there
much.
Are out there.
There is so much out there.
So what do you recommend makes a good site? Well, how do you tell people to evaluate? Is this a site that's going to work for me?
Look at whether how often your work will be featured. Look at how many other artists are on the site. Look at the way the site is marketed as a whole. Look at some of the artists that are represented on the site, and call or email them and ask them what their experience has been. Sometimes we forget to, you know, pick up the phone or send the email and talk to other artists, but that's one of the most important tips that I can provide.
Okay. Pricing was another huge issue that several people wrote in about, and I think it's probably beyond the scope of our discussion right now to really get in depth into pricing. But what are some key components that go into pricing a piece of work, especially if it's like a one-off?
Absolutely. One of the hardest things for artists is to kind of keep track of their costs. And that is one of the fundamental recommendations that I can make to them from the beginning. Even if you're starting out more as a hobbyist, be sure to track your costs. Be sure to approach it as a business. When you do go back and begin to price your work then and put it out and present it, you'll have a better sense of what to price it at. And certainly pricing one-of-a-kind work is one of the most challenging issues that faces artists. I would say, again, research is incredibly important. You need to consider where you are in the art world in terms of whether you're a beginner or sort of intermediate or well-marketed, and what is other artwork like yours selling for, and look nationally, don't just look locally.
Mm. I was listening to I think it was NPR, actually, over the weekend when I was driving down south, and they had an economist on there because they said that some artists are actually bartering for mm-hmm. their work. Like one artist was an example, exchanged teeth cleaning and a couple of crowns for their artwork. They then brought on an economist who said he thinks that's a bad idea because it devalues art and the artist. What do you think on that?
You know, I think that is such a personal decision as to where your finances are. And certainly if you need dental work, you're going to be thinking, gosh, you know, how can I get that done? From a purely professional professional development point of view, I would agree with the economist. I'd hate to see artists doing that. On the other hand, sometimes we do make personal decisions about our own finances and we just do what has to be done.
Mm. Should pricing be a driving factor in selling?
I think it needs to be a determining factor in the sense that, selling lots and lots of artwork at a very low price is never going to be something that's going to be self-sustaining. On the other hand, I think artists need to be thinking about some of the larger issues that are going on in our economy, which are, you know, they include the fact that the customer is really looking for value. So for artists to be thinking in new ways in terms of presenting a range of prices in their work is a very wise point of view.
Okay. I wanted to talk a little bit about publicity. How does one get their name in newspapers?
Well, one starts by simply submitting information to the newspapers. Everything that I have learned over my many years of doing marketing and PR work is that newspapers will print what comes in on time, and what they have space for, and what sounds the most interesting. So generally speaking, you know, we artists need to think about the fact that there's a human being on the other end of that email or that fax or that phone call even, and realize that we need to make our events, our openings interesting. I even tell artists, give it an interesting name. If you have anything to do with the naming of your event, be sure that it's enticing and invigorating and evokes interest.
How does one get their PR, their press release to stand out? I know from my days as a managing editor and from my days now as a producer, you get inundated with press releases. I mean, you can literally see hundreds a week. How do you tell artists to make sure they stand out?
There's a couple of tips I will share. One is to be sure to tell a story. There needs to be a compelling story attached to your press release. It can't simply be, Merriam-Works is having a show on, March 16th. It needs to say something about what the work is about, perhaps a cause that the show is related to, or some kind of interesting hook. There's got to be a hook in that press release. Another tip is what I mentioned just a moment ago, which is to connect your work with a cause. If there is something that you care about, whether it's a nonprofit organization, whether it's a cause that's just dear to your heart, a percent of proceeds going to that organization can be, another hook.
What's your view on social networking sites like Facebook and online?
I think they're important. I think they're still to be discovered, the true effectiveness. Certainly, many artists have used Facebook as a way to network about events, to invite folks to shows, ways of keeping – it's a great way of keeping in touch with customers that they've already established. We do need to remember, and I don't mean to sound like a dinosaur here, but we need to not replace our human contact, our telephone calls, our postcards. Our traditional forms of marketing should not be replaced by social networking, but use social networking as a tool, one of the tools in your toolkit, I should say.
And for listeners who are interested in learning more about social networking and giving your elevator speech a lift, I found when we had that show and it was on Well, I lost it again. I thought I had it. Go to my website, conversationslive.net, and just type in social media exact words in the search box. Social media exact words in the search box, and it will pull it up. It was a show we did with Robin Block and Lorraine Howell. It was either February or January when we did that. We talked a lot about those couple of things there. One of the things I liked in your book, you said... let's talk a little bit about perception, because I was always taught in the corporate world perception is reality, and I used to fight it. I used to say, no, it's not. But it is. It's that person's reality. When somebody sees you, that's their reality of you, right?
Definitely.
And you talk a lot about looking the part. And yes. I'm just thinking of a gallery showing that I went to on the East Coast, and the artist was a woman, and she looked as though she'd not run a comb through her hair for 2 weeks. She looked as though she hadn't bathed. Mm-hmm. And my feeling was, you know, if you don't care, why should I care?
Absolutely. I recently did a workshop at the Pike Place Market, and so many fabulous artists there. And one of the tips that we actually talked about for a fair amount of time was kind of the need to be comfortable kind of in your own skin and mm-hmm. in your own clothing and in your own choice of hairstyle, etc. But also the fact that the general public does not want to perceive you as a starving artist. It's not something that most folks are going to find interesting or intriguing. You know, this is not the 1950s where we get to just run around in a black turtleneck and never brush our hair. You know, we do need to appear to be professionals. And for some of us, that's not getting the perfect hairdo and makeup, but it's, you know, fitting into the environment or the venue that we're a part of.
Right. And you say that people expect you to look different. And exactly. And it's kind of disappointing when you know, an artist doesn't look different. And maybe, you know, that's, I'm stereotyping.
No,
there,
I think it's very important. I think as artists, we have the opportunity to be a little quirky. And certainly that's a great recognizable thing. If you are quirky, you know, flaunt it for sure.
I want to talk about connecting with audience. Obviously, that's something, you know, we need to do in almost every single business is connect with our audience. And you give such a great anecdote. You were at a dinner party and asked an artist who he thought his customer was.
Yes.
Tell us that story.
Yes, this was a great story. I said to an artist that I had been working with and networking with for quite some time, you know, Mark, who is your customer? And he kind of leaned back in his chair and just turned to me and said, oh, my customer's name is Shirley. She lives in an upscale suburb of a large city. She's got a good income. She works for a corporation, and she is going to be purchasing my top-end photo album for her sister's 50th birthday. And I was completely blown away. I almost fell out of my chair. And I thought, if every artist understood and knew their customer and where their artwork was going, I had a picture of it in that same way that artist did, how much closer we would all be to meeting our customer.
How do you work with somebody to define that customer?
Well, I actually have a worksheet in my book, The Artist as Entrepreneur, about who is your customer, who is your audience. And I take people through a kind of an imaginary exercise in just thinking about, and you know, whether you have one customer, 50 customers, or 1,000 customers, or whatever, you can begin to create this profile just in your own mind. And some of the questions are, you know, is your customer local or national? Is your customer a traveler, a tourist? Are they based here or both? Are they male? Are they female? What is their general income range? How do they decorate their home? What kinds of things do they like to do? Those are all things that we should be asking ourselves. It's what traditional businesses, you know, the normal businesses mm-hmm, do. Mm-hmm. We artists need to do more of that.
Okay. And I want to ask you, you know, I know a lot of artists who are extrovert. I know equally as many who are introverted. For those who are introverted, when they're doing gallery shows and exhibitions, what kind of advice do you give to them about, you know, appearing open and connecting with viewers?
You know, I really recommend to artists that are a little less outgoing, and this is many, many artists, of course, is to focus on the work itself and to kind of engage in a dialogue about the artwork. Why did you make it? What does it express for you? I was at an opening a couple of weeks ago, and one of my companions asked the young artist, you know, what is this work about? And she began to describe the work, the life that she lives. She said, my work is really about my life. It's about getting up in the morning and walking out to the barn and seeing the cows and the cats running around. And she just basically told a story. She wasn't a particularly outgoing person, but she helped us understand her work simply by telling us the story of what inspires her every day.
Interesting. One of the artists wrote into me, and her name is Carolyn Osborne, excuse me, and she's down also in Tacoma. And she said that she does one-of-a-kind jewelry and charcoals and watercolors. She has a hard time getting her work out there and would like to find someone that can market for me or be a rep. What advice do you give to people about that?
Yeah, reps and agents are so tough to find for beginning artists. Now, I'm not clear from, the description how much her work is currently out there, but many agents and reps, unless they're going to charge an upfront fee, generally don't like to take on sort of more newbie artists. So that's a real tough one. She may find, if I were consulting with her, I might recommend to her that she focus in one area and hold off maybe on the others. It's very difficult to build a career in three different arenas simultaneously. So that's not really what she asked about. But I might recommend, focus on the charcoal or the watercolor, or the jewelry, and perhaps find a gallery or a shop, initially that might help her promote her work.
Mm. What's the difference between an agent and an art rep and a consultant?
Well, it's kind of terminology. Agents generally that's generally the term for the fine art world. Rep is kind of the term for sort of more the craft or the production art world.
Let's talk a little about working with galleries and exhibitions. You say that showing in a gallery is often considered an ultimate goal, mm-hmm. But gallery representation doesn't work well for some artists.
Exactly. Some artists have a very difficult time with the fact that a gallery will be taking, in their view, taking 50% of their price to their customer. They also maybe don't research the galleries that are well established and perhaps, have relationships with galleries that are maybe not as well established or not as professional. And those types of galleries do exist out there. So it's very, very important for artists to research the galleries that they're trying to connect with, that they look at their reputation, and that they, shop with their mind open, but don't just leap at any opportunity simply because it's someone who wants to represent their work.
Right. Tips for marketing on a shoestring.
Ooh, shoestring. Yes, we're all on a shoestring these days, aren't we? Do not overlook the importance of personal connection. Make sure that you are staying in touch with your customer. Email is overused sometimes, but is an inexpensive method of marketing. If you are having a show locally, call your folks that have purchased your work in the past and just let them know it's happening. One of the a very common roadblock is that artists don't think that their customers will be interested in hearing about what they're doing, and nothing could be further than the truth. Customers in general are very, very pleased to have been contacted by an artist. It's sort of a big honor.
Mm. I know one artist in Canada, Andrea Pratt. Her website is andreapratt.com. Pratt is Pratt. And she has a great blog. It's called Coloring Outside the Lines.
Mm, love it.
And she does a lot of work on the blog and a lot of work with online stuff. So I'd encourage listeners listening today to check that out. It's Coloring Outside the Lines by AndreaPratt.com. You say in the book, set income goals. Now, for somebody who's not, even sold one piece of art, that mm-hmm. might be a little daunting, and they think, why bother? But it is important, isn't it?
It is. It is, absolutely. And we can't attain what we cannot imagine. And I think I really recommend to artists that they think about their goal and that they put a number to it. And even if it seems like a pie in the sky situation to begin with, they will move closer to that goal simply by having set that goal.
Okay, very good. Well, we're almost at the end of our show, and I want to make sure we get your website out. And now this book that I've been working from today, The Artist as Entrepreneur.
Yes.
This is for sale. You don't have to go to a workshop for that,
is it? No, you do not need to go to a workshop for that. You can contact me at www.works-consulting.com and just contact me. Let me know you're interested in the book, and I'll shoot it off to you.
What would you like to leave our listeners with today?
I would like to recommend to them that they keep inspired, keep their own personal well full, and emphasize the importance of that with all of the dire news we have coming toward us, you know, every day. Just remember that it's so important to refill our own personal well of creativity.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I want to thank you so much for being with us. I haven't got through half my questions. We're going to have you back another
oh,
time.
Thank you. I'd love to come.
But go ahead and give out your website again.
Okay, great. That is www.works, which is W-O-R-K-S, -consulting.com.
Miriam Works, thank you so much.
Thank you, Vicky.
And Miriam's book again, The Artist as Entrepreneur, a business and marketing guide for artists and craftspeople. Now, I'm going to put the podcast up on the website today. I'll also put the links up there to all of the artists that I mentioned, and I want to thank everyone for giving me great input for good questions for Miriam today. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll be here with Joyce Chapman, who's going to say, don't give up on your dream, even in this economy. She's going to tell you how to be your own coach. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair.
Violet haze, reflect in Vincent's eyes of china blue, colors changing hue. Morning fields of amber grain.
Do something different with your spare time. Give baby animals at Paws a fresh start. With the assistance of caring volunteers, Paws helps hundreds of orphaned and sick kittens and puppies each year. Join us and save lives. Become a Paws foster care volunteer. For more information, visit paws.org or 425-787-2500. Paws.org or 425-787-2500.
When someone asks, what do you do, how do you answer? If you want to stand out in the crowd and have people remember you when you're networking, you must have a great opening line. It's often called your elevator speech, and every entrepreneur and business professional needs a clear, concise, and memorable conversation starter. Well, Lorraine Howell was a guest on our show in January. She's a former television producer and media skills training expert, and she's offering personalized classes for people who need to boost their networking and conversational skills. Workshops are limited to just 4 people for these half-day sessions, so they're very intimate, very focused on your specific needs. I attended one and know firsthand that Lorraine really knows her stuff. She's a great facilitator and wants you to leave the class feeling good about starting your next networking conversation. She even provides a free follow-up telecall to make sure your elevator speech works for you. For more information and class schedules, visit Lorraine Howell's www.mediaskillstraining.com. That's mediaskillstraining.com.
Commune with the Pop Oracle on the Radio 8 Ball Show. I'm Andras Jones, the host of the Radio 8 Ball Show, where we answer your questions by picking songs at random and interpreting them as the answers, like picking musical tarot cards. That's the Radio 8 Ball Show on Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
Don't miss the Radio 8 Ball Show, Fridays at noon, right here on Alternative Talk, 1150.
Like what you hear? Be sure and support the sponsors who support your favorite programs on Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
What you tried to say to me, and how you suffered for your sanity, and how you tried to set them free. They would not listen, they did not know how. Perhaps they'll listen now, for they could not love you. But still your love was true. And when no hope was left in sight on that starry, starry night, you took your life as lovers often do. But I could have told you, Vincent, this world was never meant for one as beautiful as you.
Oh, my goodness. My calling was to be a musician, but I can't sing a flipping note. And every time I hear that, it sends chills all down me.
Don McLean.
I know, but I just love that song.
It's all about Vincent Van Gogh. Which,
yes, I know. Very appropriate. Yeah. Very appropriate.
I think he could have probably used a coach, though, you know? The way things turned out for him,
He probably could have done with Joyce Chapman to cheer him up.
Yeah.
Yes, I know. Well, you're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. My first guest today was arts professional Miriam Works. And I'm pleased to have back on the show now Joyce Chapman. She's been with us before. She's devoted her life to empowering others, first as a teacher for the California public school system, later as director and developer of an innovative private school in San Diego, California. And for many years now, she's been a consultant, speaker, counselor, coach, author, dream activist. She's got a master's degree in counseling psychology and a California lifetime teaching credential. Joyce Chapman, welcome to the show.
Hi.
Very pleased to have you back, Joyce.
Thanks. Good to be back.
And gosh, we're living in strange times right now, but you say don't give up on dreams. You know, you can still dream big dreams, still have big goals. And coaching obviously helps, but many people maybe don't want to spend the money on coaching right now. So you say, be your own coach.
That's true.
Why and how?
Why and how? Why and how to be your coach? Well, first of all, you, Vicky, anybody else listening, you're the one that knows yourself the best. And so therefore, if you take the time to find out exactly what you want, and what you're willing to do and commit to, you can learn to be your own coach. It doesn't happen overnight, which we'll talk about more for sure. But the good news is that you can achieve that role in your own life. I'm certain of that.
Yeah. Now, you do work as a coach. So why encourage us to be our own coach and not to work with a professional?
Well, I'm not encouraging you not to work with a professional to start off with, but I definitely do this for a living, and I also have had such an exciting thing happen for me, and it's so satisfying that over the past several years, clients that I'm coaching begin to coach themselves. As they, you know, better understand what they want, they start to create step-by-step plans. We join together, and almost always achieve what they say they want. So I know that, and I call that being a dream coach, but also call that being a good dream partner as I join with a person to, you know, pull from within themselves what it is that they want to do and how they can do it. And so it's just like hand in hand, we go down that path together.
Many coaches I know, Joyce, and I've worked with coaches myself, and they've always had their own coaches. Do you have your own coach, or do you coach yourself? Are you your own coach?
No, I don't have my own coach. I am my own coach. And I believe, as you would guess, Vicky, that the main reason that I have that confidence in myself is because of the journal keeping, that my passion for keeping a personal journal and encouraging others to do so. So I really do trust, and that's a big word that's you may hear again today, really trust that if I take the time, ask the questions, do the writing, and sometimes search out for an expert to ask, I will know what to do and what my next step is. And it didn't happen overnight, Vicky. Lots and lots of years, lots and lots of reading, lots of journaling, lots of listening to others share their processes.
Right, and I know you're very big into journaling. You've written several books on journaling. You've one of them is called Notice and Journal, and you have The Joy of Journaling, I believe, are your other books. You have workbooks to go with those. What is it about journaling that nothing else can do?
Well, first of all, as I mentioned just a minute ago, that you can, you're the one that knows yourself, you know, and journaling is a tool and a skill that you can develop to continue that self-discovery process that's just always there for you. When I first started journaling, I knew I had a good life. I knew who I was. I knew what I wanted, and I was doing what I loved to do, and all of a sudden, I started to see I wanted more. And I, to this minute, I think that it was because I started to ask myself questions. You know, who do you want to be this lifetime? What's your largest contribution that you can give? And I don't know that I would have tapped into that had I not taken the time to write those questions and then write them and then reread them and then take a step towards what I just learned about myself.
Right.
So self-learning.
Yeah, self-discovery, very much so. And now, some people don't like writing, but visual pictures, sketches work just as well, right?
Oh, absolutely. And I've not a lot of people, but I've had a few people who just really, really resist the writing. So I said, okay, get a tape recorder. You know, the only thing that I would encourage that person to do is then re-listen to what you ask yourself a question and then talk into the tape recorder, then re-listen to it and tell yourself what you've just discovered, what you've just learned, a new insight.
Okay.
I call them ahas.
Yes.
Oh, that's who I am. I forgot.
I know myself from journaling, and I do sketch. I'm not an artist by any means, but I'm very visual, so I'll sometimes use pictures in the journaling process.
Oh, absolutely.
And I know it's very difficult to lie to yourself. Not that we think we are or we deliberately lie to ourselves, but if you're actually writing something and then reading it back, you think, well, wait a minute, that's not true. That's not really how I feel. Isn't that true?
Oh, I think that's such a wonderful point, Vicki. It's just like, I can't even tell myself a lie anymore. You know, and I think that before I started this journey into myself, I think I just kind of let life happen more than now. And now I'm totally active in making all my choices and decisions and deciding what the day is going to be like, mm-hmm. and, you know, what I need to do today, what I want to do today. The word want is very important.
Yeah, want and choose, right? Choose is the way we want to go on that. So let me use myself as an example, just because nobody else is here. Eric bailed. I would have used Eric, but he's bailed on me.
Where is that other person?
So we can get very specific on this process and what it's going to do for us. Let me say that I have a project on my back burner, and it's been on my back burner for a long time, but it's a project I'm very passionate about. What do I need to do to be my own coach? Where do I even begin to be my own coach to get this project off the ground?
Well, I think the very first step for anyone is to really know yourself. And I've had people say, I know myself, and I'll go, great. and then we start the process. Like, do you know what your learning style is? Do you know what you really want out of your life? Do you know what you need? You know, on and on and on and on. And I could give you a whole list of questions, which I'd be happy to give you. And then also a very important part is like, do I really know when I need to reach out to an expert? And then do I reach out to get that guidance and help? So it's like you're not alone. Of course you're not alone. And yet you are alone in that you are the designer of your life. I believe that. Very, very strongly.
Yes. And so if I understand you correctly, what you're saying is that to be my own coach, I need to be the one asking the questions.
Yep.
Questioning.
Questions.
Not just taking for granted that what I'm saying I want to do is actually what I really want to do.
You know that wonderful question, what do I want to be when I grow up?
Yeah, but if I really know, and I've already gone through all of that process, because we've covered this on other shows before, so, you know, it's kind of getting to that next level now. We know what we want to do, but something's still stopping us, you know, and it may be time, it may be money. It's going to be different for everybody. So how do we apply the inner coach to drive us forward on that? Do we need to set up, you know, milestones, timelines? What's the very first step we need to begin with ourselves to get us moving forward?
Well, I think like if you have defined, you know, I want to do such and such, then it is very important then to to get to the, okay, what is it going to take for me to get myself to that result? Now, how am I going to realize this dream? You know, what is it that I have within myself that is going to, you know, get me to that goal that I've set for myself? And then as you start to define that, sometimes you discover, oh, well, I'm not very good at that. So you have to correct, or you get some help, or you realize that you have to set up a different system. On and on and on. It never stops. You just keep opening the doors to find out what's next. And I really think that's a wonderful question to ask oneself all the time. Okay, what's next?
Right.
And then, of course, loving yourself in that process, too. Laughing. I definitely believe it's very important to laugh at yourself.
Sometimes when you start off, you're very motivated, the adrenaline's going, you're excited, this is new, this is fresh. And then we get to a point where it's like, oh, you know, what do I do now? Or I don't want to do the next level. How do we keep ourselves motivated? Because when you work with a professional coach, or, you know, a group, whatever you choose to do, there's somebody else you have to be accountable to. How do we keep ourselves accountable to ourselves?
Well, right here in front of me, I have in my notes, hold yourself accountable 100% of the time.
But how?
Now you want to know how. Well, let me share the way I do it. Like, I say to myself, I'm playful with myself. And you probably know that about me already from our other interviews, and I'm playful with myself. So I say to myself, okay, I say I want to change the world and inspire others to change the world as well. How am I going to do that if I don't get up and do something? You know, so I am constantly, and I, as I said, I'm using myself as an example, re-inspiring myself. Do I take time off? Of course. You know, do I give myself afternoons walking along the beach? Of course I do. However, I always have that idea of who I want to be this lifetime as my motivating force. And I believe all people who have made a difference have that same belief and also that same drive within themselves. Mm. And it's just, you know, and never that wonderful thought of never, never, never giving up. Making a plan and following it.
But it's easy. It's much easier for some people, I'm sure you'd agree, than it is for others, right? Some people have less distractions. Some people with no distractions can still be very distracted.
I know a few like that.
Well, I've been like it myself sometimes, you know.
Well, you know, it's a paradox because you have to take yourself extremely seriously, but you also have to be gentle with yourself, you know, as you do that. I'm not quite in agreement with it's easier for some than others. I do believe that the focus is the most important aspect of living one's dream, of being the person that they really choose to be. And that if you decide to do that early on in your life or now in your life or later on in life, it will happen. I just have all the confidence in the world that it will happen. The divine timing aspect, you know, when it will happen is a whole other aspect. We could have another show about that, Vicki.
Now, Julia Cameron, who wrote The Artist's Way and many, many other books, she's actually a playwright, and she's into many, many different projects herself. But she says in her books that all journaling must be done longhand, and her theory behind that is it comes from the brain to the heart through the arm. Are you of that opinion, or are you do it whichever way it works for you?
Well, I do all my journaling by longhand, and I advise others to do all their journaling by longhand. And as we said earlier, if a person isn't going to do it, I say do it your way. You know, the main thing is to get those ideas out of yourself and onto, you know, into some kind of form where it's more tangible. So I definitely recommend that heart to hand connection, and I strongly, strongly advise to do all your journaling in one hand.
Okay, and you actually...
When a person looks at me and says, but I only use a computer, I'll go, okay, go ahead.
Yeah, well, basically whatever works. And I know you do have some books, and we're at the end of our segment right now, Joyce. So I need to give out your website and whichever books you recommend for this process to help us along the way.
Oh, my goodness. Well, my website's easy. Simply my name, Joyce Chapman. And on the website, I now have a blog that, there's a link that you can click on. And what I'm doing more and more with the blog is answering questions online.
So, okay. So that might be the best way for people
and
to...
And I'm an expert coach, so I can, assist with, maybe a question to ask oneself, to share in a problem,
okay.
A concern. And so it's a really nice way to have a dialogue with somebody who is a trained coach, which I am.
Okay, well, that sounds good. So you can find Joyce's blog at www.joycechapman.com. Joyce, thank you so much for being with us today. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, Vicki. Be sure to practice being your own coach.
I will. All right. I want to just... let you know that Dr. Judith Orloff was a guest on March 9th. She talked about emotional freedom. The podcast is on the homepage of Conversations Live at conversationslive.net. And Dr. Orloff is coming to Seattle March 20th, which is this Friday. She'll be at the Unity Church of Seattle 7 to 9:30 p.m. And you can register to see her if you want at womenofwisdom.org. We're running out of time, but I also want to let you know that Book Talk, we moved Book Talk podcasts to my website. Very accessible now. You can just go to conversationslive.net, click on Book Talk, and you'll find our most recent podcast up there. We'll get the archives up there later this month. Thanks so much for being with us today. We will be back next week with all new programming. Until then, live well, live strong.
Next week on Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair, we'll explore giving peace a deadline. Guests Nathan Otto and Amber Lupton traveled the world examining what peace means, and they are convinced that if we all participate, we can have world peace in 5 years. We'll also talk with Dr. Lydia Denworth, a leading expert on America's lead-free policies and author of Toxic Truth, A Scientist, A Doctor, and the Battle Over Lead. Please join us Monday at noon on Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair.